Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Perkins Platform. This is a monthly solutions-oriented talk radio show. Each month, we dedicate about 30 minutes to explore contemporary issues and solutions in education leadership, and this is your host, Brian Perkins. This month, our guests are Dr. James Comer, who is the Maurice Falk Professor of Child Psychiatry at the Yale School of Medicine, and Ms. Patricia Tony, who is the principal at the Southside Early Childhood Center in South Carolina. So I'd like to take this moment to welcome both of you. Welcome.
Thank you.
To our faithful listeners, welcome back. Thank you for being part of our family of over 5,000 listeners every month. And to our new listeners, we're glad to have you and glad that you decided to join us. Today, we're going to discuss the Yale School Development Program in New Haven, Connecticut. We have only 30 minutes, so I'm just going to jump right in. I'm really excited to have Dr. Comer and Tony with us as a part of the series that we're doing on school intervention programs and strategies to help improve both community engagement, academic achievement, and other areas in the schools and districts. And so, Dr. Comer, I'm going to start by asking you to tell us a little bit, not just about the program, but just from a historical perspective. I'm aware that you started the program back in the 1960s in New Haven, Connecticut. One of the things that I'd like you to share with the listeners, given the context of what was happening in schools, not just in New Haven, but around the country with the social structure changing, individuals, both two parents going to work and all kinds of economic change going on, I'd like you to tell us a little bit about what was going on then that made you realize that this would be would end up in, being your life's work in schools, and how that shifted, if it has, to what's going on in our society today relative to education. Tell us a little bit about the evolution, if you will, of the school development program.
Well, while there's been a breakdown in family that has increased, there were problems when I started in the 60s. My best friends, who were just as smart as me, my brothers and sisters, yet they did not do as well in school. And so that question is what led me into psychiatry, child psychiatry, work in schools, and to see if we couldn't make a difference for those kids. And that led to a focus on supporting the development of children, because I realized that was the only difference between me and my friends. And so that's been the focus of the program for all these years. And we've been in over 1,000 schools, and currently the work in South Carolina is an extension, continuation of that work at the local level. But also we're focusing on policy, because I'm convinced that unless we can get teachers and administrators to think child and adolescent development and support for it rather than control and punishment, we're not going to address this problem very well.
Sure, sure. So you mentioned breakdown of family occurred. Tell me more about that. Tell me what exactly was happening.
That's largely economic. The mm-hmm. fact that the agricultural society moved on, and the industrial society moved on, and we now have families that can't earn a living because without an education to fit into the economy of today and tomorrow. And that's been the major cause of breakdown in family. But we haven't addressed that, and then we haven't addressed schools, so that the issues in schools, the way they play out with families that are not able to help their kids because of this economic stress they're under, then we have teachers and administrators not being prepared to think child and adolescent development. That only compounds the problem.
Sure, sure. And so you mentioned that you're convinced that you're doing more in the policy arena is going to strengthen that. What do you anticipate happening? Are you saying that you're trying to reach more state legislature members, or is this more a local policy issue?
Well, it's more local, but the hope is that you can start local and eventually have national influence, just as our original program started local and eventually had national influence. But the important thing is to get schools of education to think differently and work differently. It's not the teacher's fault or administrator's fault that the thinking of child and adolescent development is not there. It's because they're not trained to think about it. And unless many have it intuitively, you know, like Ms. Tony, I was telling her, I observed her program when we first went down, and you could see that there was an intuitive understanding of why you have to support the development of children. But we can't depend on the intuitive. You have to have the training for most people to be able to think child and adolescent development, and less punishment and control and more support for development and helping children make good decisions would lead to fewer behavior problems, would make them more available for academic learning and preparation for school and life.
Well, you know, one of the things that I'm aware of that I think is a very important aspect of the work you do, and I think it has been a tremendous contribution to the field, is the way you have thought about child development and adolescent development along your six developmental pathways.
And Ms. Tony's Ms. Tony's school is a perfect example of that. You should just see.
That's good. And so, Ms. Tony, could you tell us a little bit about how your school has implemented the notion of the six developmental pathways as an approach to educating the children there?
Well, when we first started with the program, this is our third year of implementation, we looked at the pathways, and because we are an early childhood center, we already thought we knew a lot about childhood development. But going through this program helped us to refocus on that aspect, on the six developmental pathways in every aspect of the child's well-being. And so we started out as a faculty as we went through the year and looked at each of the pathways. Then we decided, okay, what can we do? First, we had to educate our parents on what the pathways were. And then we started doing things here at the school to address those issues. When I have a child come to me because of discipline problems, then we look at those pathways and decide, okay, where is this child weak? What do we need to strengthen here? And when we look at our students with our response to intervention, which we call SSST team, we look at those developmental pathways more seriously now and say, okay, well, this is an area, what's the physical aspect? Is he getting enough rest? Can he see? Can he hear well? So we are looking at it more in depth now, I think, because of this process. There's more conversations about those pathways than ever before.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Sure.
And I think our teachers and I myself are thinking differently now about children and some of the problems that they come to us with. And really it's something that can be solved easily when we look at it from a developmental aspect.
Yes. And so, I'm sorry, are you still there?
Yeah.
Yes, sir. Mm-hmm.
Yes, okay, sorry, and you had cut out just for a moment. Yes, so just as a follow-up to that, I know that some of our listeners may not be aware of these pathways, so I just want to say what those are. Physical pathway, cognitive, language, social, ethical, and psychological pathway. What exactly, so how I should ask, how does that translate in the classroom or in your school, the way your school operates? If you're looking at these pathways, what's different than what we would expect in, say, your average school?
Well, one of the things that we did here at Southside is we looked at and we tried to, as we were, the teachers were really learning it, we had to decide, okay, which one we're going to focus on first. And we all, each consensus is, okay, we're going to look at the physical. And that was really an interesting exercise because everyone had their own take on what was more important. So once we reached consensus, we decided, okay, we're going to focus on the physical aspect because most of our children are 4 and 5 year olds. And if they don't get enough rest, and we found that a lot of parents don't understand the need for their little ones to have 8 or more hours of sleep, believe it or not. So when we started focusing on that and educating our parents, they need to get more sleep. They need to eat more nutritious food. So we have worked with our food service here at school. We serve fresh fruit and vegetables for snack time during the day. And so we had to rethink all of that and realize what was important. And so we talked about the importance of water and how that helps to hydrate the brain. So we have parents that actually bring cases of bottled water to school for classrooms to drink throughout the day.
Yeah.
Oh, you know, we have the water fountain, but now they know that they can have a bottle of water while they're working. So those kinds of things have really made an impact on our students. And so we moved from the because, you know, everyone always talk about the cognitive. They always thought, oh, my child knows this, knows that, but there's other aspects of child growth and development, and that's one of the things that we as educators here at Southside had to get our parents to understand, and we had to make a concerted effort to place emphasis on that. And so we started implementing those things in our daily lessons. Every morning, doing morning announcements, we have what we call our physical pathway time, and we will play an exercise CD over the intercom, and everyone does physical pathway exercise for 2 to 3 minutes every morning. And, you know, and teachers, too, I say we have to model what we want our students to do. And so those kinds of things. And then when we looked at the language and how important language is, and especially at this age, educating our parents and our teachers are understanding that and making our students speak in complete sentences when they're talking and just really focusing on that because, you know, some and I'm guilty of kids coming up and they answer, yeah, no, you know, yes, ma'am, no, ma'am, those manners and things that are so very important.
And I observed children making statements and then teachers would ask them to enlarge on that or explain what they meant and help them think and reason. All of those interactions are very important, not only in being able to express yourself, but those interactions help improve the development of the brain and the mind.
Absolutely. And Ms. Tony, you mentioned how you reached out to parents and actually let them know, give them some training and information about what you were doing and how these pathways are important with the bottled water example, which is a good opportunity for us to talk a little bit about the structures. And I remember from some years ago that the developmental process so is also focused from an organizational side to address the school needs. Dr. Coleman, could you tell us a little bit about the organizational structures that are in place that support that work that of the developmental pathways?
Well, the school planning and management team works together as representative of parents, teachers, administrators, all the adult stakeholders, and they plan the comprehensive school program that's both social and academic. And there is assessment and adjustment as necessary. And there are a set of guidelines that really create a culture that supports the school. Those are three guidelines, no-fault decision-making and consensus agreement on how to address problems based on what's good for children, and then cooperation, collaboration among staff and among everybody. All of that helps create a good culture in the school. So the and then the operations that they carry out, but those are the structures. There are nine structures or nine elements that make up the structures that help to create a culture that allows all the adults then to focus on supporting the development of children along the critical developmental pathways.
Once you do
that, you can integrate development and learning in a way that makes it possible for children to learn at a higher level.
Sure, sure. And so, Ms. Tony, I assume you also have this school planning and management team. How does that work in your school? How has that been as an experience for your staff and community members?
It's been wonderful. Now, the first year, it was really interesting trying to, first of all, as principal, give up some authority and know that I don't have to make all decisions, and then also getting my teachers to understand that, you know, we're no fault consensus, and we're going to collaborate, and we're going to make decisions in the best interest of students. And so we're much better at it now. You know, at one point the teachers would say, "Oh God, Ms. Tony, you just make decisions. We don't want that task." But I think they appreciate the fact that they all have input and everyone is heard, and that when the decision is made, we can all support it. And
we've
implemented some things here at school that I probably would have never thought of as, you know, as administrator. That has been wonderful things, just allowing our professional development team to decide on what professional developments we're going to do for teachers as well as for parents has been wonderful. They've come up with some really great activities and stuff. So it's been refreshing, and it's taken a lot of the pressure off of me, per se, and sharing that leadership.
Right, and I was thinking the same thing when Dr. Comer mentioned no fault consensus. So you, by sharing in the decision making, you share in the responsibility, and you know, because it's easy for it. And human nature is that, you know, we often look for someone to blame when things don't go as expected. But in this case, it really is a shared responsibility to make decisions, and so it's. If it's anyone's fault, it's everyone's fault. So it's not really about assigning blame one place or another. It's making decisions that are in the best interest of the children who are in the school. So I definitely see the utility there. To our guests that have just joined us, you've reached the Perkins platform, and we have our guests today here, Dr. James Comer from the Yale Child Studies Center and Ms. Patricia Tony from the Southside Early Childhood Center in South Carolina. And we're going to open our lines up if we have any callers with any questions or comments. The call-in number 347-826-9029. Again, 347-826-9029. Feel free to call in with your comments or questions. And I want to go back to Ms. Tony. So you described quite candidly that it took you at least a moment to really realize that you didn't have to make all the decisions, which is a great segue into my the next question I had for you was, how do you feel being a part of the school development program, the Comer process, how that has influenced you as a leader? What has it done for your leadership style?
I think I am more, I've always felt like I was collaborative, you know, collaborate with others well. But I learned that I would if it went my way. So I had to really, and I'm telling you, I had to really say, okay, we'll try it. No, okay. No, and the decision wasn't just totally mine, and so it took a while. but I'm telling you now, I realize this: the stress level is not there, and really empowering my teachers and then helping to develop leaders has been wonderful. Just to see the growth in them really makes me happy that I was able to do that. And just to sit and when we make the decision and the structure's there, how we can get a lot more done because we don't have to spend time going all, you know, we have a time set and we meet. And the teachers, one of the, whoever is the chairperson, they lead the meeting. So that means that I'm not the one always in charge. Now, there's certain things that, you know, as the administrator, I'm bound to, okay, you know, I got to make this decision.
Mm-hmm.
But things that, and we've gotten a lot done here at school that probably me as a principal would not have been able to accomplish alone.
Mm-hmm.
Like we had some mobile units here at school that needed some handicap ramps, and you know the district would say, you know, it's not in your budget and that and this and that. But when the SPMT got involved, and you know you have parents and community members as well on this team, we were able to get it accomplished. And I'm like, wow, I like this.
Sure. It's a whole community responsibility, which I think, you know, from based on my personal knowledge of the program and anything you read about it, including the books that have been written, the many books that have been written about the process and the program, that it really has a strong community component. Dr. Comer and I have spoken on many occasions about, as he referred to, that also the breakdown of family and the breakdown of community. And so tell us a little bit, Ms. Sonia, about, so do you feel that this this process helped galvanize the community in some ways? You know, sometimes communities need something to be on the same page about. Do you feel that the school efforts have helped to bring people together to work together?
It has, and I can say because as a school leader, we had put more effort into bringing the community in. And that's important. And so we have community members that are coming in and mentoring our students, which has been wonderful because we put more effort towards that. Before, we had always said, oh, we wish the community to come in, but we were never really diligent about getting them to come in. And so that has helped us. And getting the parents involved and having this parent team has really allowed our school to have more parents and the community members involved because they, although parents on the team have students at the school, they may know someone in the community that they have a relationship with that they can get to come do things here at the school that we wouldn't necessarily know, and they were able to get that to happen. So that part is really wonderful.
And that was the mothers and sons night that
yes.
I was there for.
Yes, sir.
It was just a very warm and exciting evening they had, and you could just see how that generates the desire on the part of parents to be involved. Can you describe that just a little bit?
Yes, sir. Actually, that came from a parent team meeting. That was a suggestion from my parents. Because you always hear about the mother, the father-daughter dance during Valentine's.
Yes.
Most organizations.
Mm-hmm.
And so some of our mothers were like, well, why can't we have anything for mothers and sons? And so we said, yeah, we can do this. We can have a mother-son dance. And they dress up and they come out. And, you know, we talk to our boys about how you, what the manners you are to use when with your mother and opening the door and stuff. And so they really have a great time. So that's, this is our second year doing it, and our parents and our students have really, really enjoyed that process.
Wow. Wow, that's wonderful. So just out of curiosity, how did you hear about the program itself and make the decision to implement it in your school?
This was a part of a community project called Pulse through our Sunoco School Foundation. And our superintendent called me up one Friday and said she wanted to meet with me and three of my colleagues. And she said, we have an opportunity for the Comer School Development Program, and would you be interested? And I'm like, yeah, I knew a little bit about it. I'm like, yeah, I would like to learn more about it. And so when we went to Yale that summer for about a week, I think it was, and we learned more about it, I'm like, okay, I can see how this could fit into my school. And so we hit the ground running. We made some plans while we were there because one of my teachers went with me. And we came back to the faculty and we shared some ideas and what it was all about. And we decided to do some things differently. We wanted more parents to be involved, and we wanted to find a way to inform our parents about this program. So we decided to think out of the box and open our school year differently than we had in the past. We decided instead of having open house during the week when we normally do during the first, when during registration, we would have open house on a Sunday afternoon. I wrote my parents a letter and we said, okay, we're going to have open house on a Sunday afternoon. Please come out after lunch, after church, and meet your teacher to visit. No school, you know, I don't want you to pass out paperwork. Just come and visit. It was awesome because you had not only moms but dads, because oftentimes during the weekdays the parents are working. And you had whole families. You had grandparents. You had uncles, aunts. And everybody came out that Sunday afternoon. And so we said, wow, this is great. And so and also we decided that we always did a staggered schedule where we had the boys would come one day and the girls would come the next day so we could have smaller sizes and we could talk about routines and procedures. This time we asked that each child come to school the first day with a parent to stay the school day. And, you know, if they couldn't, that's fine, but we wanted every child, if a parent couldn't come, send someone significant in that child's life. And so what we did, they came in, the teachers went over their routine, and then we took all of the parents that were here to the cafeteria, and we talked to them about the school development program and what it was all about and the six developmental pathways. And we informed them that we would be sending information home throughout the year. We're going to focus on certain pathways. We're going to have workshops. So that's how we started this process. And I'm telling you, it's gotten even better.
That's wonderful.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. No, it sounds wonderful, and it sounds like it's definitely a great experience that you've had, not unlike many that I've heard that have engaged with the staff at the Child Study Center. I know with Dr. Comer's project, and it's been a long history of practitioners assisting, providing technical assistance in districts, and so I think that has been the hallmark of success there. And also to listeners, if you have not seen on our website, we have provided a link for the school development program, and you'll be able to read more about Dr. Comer. And you have to be sure to check out some of his books. Amazing reads. I've read each and every one of them. And so I wholeheartedly recommend those. And so I want to take this moment before we wrap up here to thank both of you again for being on the show. and to let our audience know that we'll be back next month on April 23rd at 2 p.m., where we have as a guest Dr. Warren Simmons, who is the Executive Director of the Annenberg Institute for School Reform at Brown University, continuing on with our series on school improvement initiatives. And so I am delighted that we were able to have talk as brief as it was. 30 minutes goes really quickly, but it is always a pleasure to talk to you, Dr. Comer and Ms. Tony. If I'm ever in South Carolina, we're going to also put a link for our listeners to your school on the website. But if I'm ever in your neck of the woods in South Carolina, I hope I can stop by and see the great things that are going on at your school. So thanks again for being on the show, and to the audience, till next time, go well, stay well.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.